Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So we just finished a retreat last night, and when I got here this morning for a minute, I was like, why are all these people in the retreat all of a sudden? I just kind of rolled in today, still in that state of mind. So I'm talking today about effort. This retreat was about what is right effort, and what is your right effort. The Pali word for effort, samavayama, means cultivation of what is karmically wholesome and avoidance of what is karmically unwholesome. As though that explains it. There are four kinds of right effort. This is from the Pali Canon. To prevent faults from arising, to abandon faults when they have arisen, to produce merit, and to increase merit that has already arisen. Pretty straightforward. So we make an effort at each of these points. So I want to say a little bit about how the retreat was different from our usual retreats. It was a very simple structure with very few bells. So instead of what we did this morning, 30 minutes of Zazen, 10 minutes of Kinhin, 30 minutes of Zazen, with a bell marking the beginning and end of each of those, there was just one bell at the start, and then two and a half or 3 hours later, there would be another bell. And during that period of time, you could do what you wanted. You could sit, stand at your seat, move to a different chair, lie down in one of the lying down stations, walk here, walk on the Ngawa, walk in the garden, or the courtyard. Those were the instructions we gave at the beginning. That you could take whatever posture you needed during that period, but to stay focused in Zazen. So that sounds, it might sound if you weren't here like it was fussy, like people were moving around all the time, but in fact it was very peaceful and quiet. It was deeply quiet. Instead of the bell rings and everybody bows and everybody stands up and half of them go to the bathroom and the other half start going around in circles and then the bell rings and everybody goes back to their seats, all of that was gone. And I found myself thinking, that felt really fussy. That when we do that, that feels fussy. This was very simple. Each person had to take responsibility for shifting in the quietest way possible. So there were long periods of stillness and then a little breeze of movement as a person would stand and aware that everybody was in silence, moving as quietly and slowly as possible. Over the course of the week, little stations started to appear on the Ngawa. People would set up a zafu and a zabutan out at various places on the Ngawa that they knew was there, and when they were ready, they could go out and sit outside or sit on a bench in the garden. And as I walked around, if I did a big walk, I would be passing various people, all in complete silence. We also just did a short service in the morning, nothing before lunch, two Oriyoki meals, and then an informal buffet supper that is called the medicine meal, which by tradition isn't really pointed at or noticed. You just take the food if you need it, and everybody's supposed to politely look away. And we only had one teisho, one Dharma talk on the first night. So nights were also like this. And because we recited the Kesa verse at the end of Zazen, that meant the Kesa verse at the end, right before service, wear your Kesa for short service and then take it off until the evening. So we just wore Roxus, which was really nice in terms of being simpler, but also makes it really easy to take other postures. And we all look the same. I found myself leaning continually into what is the simpler choice. So I think those of us who have done a lot of retreats, even if we've done a lot of retreats elsewhere, we still develop an idea of what a retreat should be, what it looks like, what it feels like, what the rhythm is. We lean on certain things, we expect certain things. So you get used to this rhythm of a retreat. This past week challenged all those preconceptions and all those expectations. It challenged our rhythm and took away a lot of the things that we're used to, that we call the container, and forced us to create our own container. Now, I had assumed going in, this is only the second time we've done this, and the first time it was, we were really maybe more forthright about how this allows you to self-regulate, and if you need to take breaks, you can take breaks. So it's a gateway for people who are maybe intimidated by retreat or have physical issues or worry about that. When I first, for years, my first years and years of retreat, I would say my practice was waiting for the bell to ring a lot of the time. It was seeking entertainment. It was, what's the next thing that will distract me? That was what I struggled with a lot in Zazen, was leaning forward to getting out of Zazen. Anything but more Zazen. So I loved big services, and I loved long teishos, and I loved oryoki meals, and what happens next. And so I hadn't really counted on how taking all of that away intensified the practice for newer people. It was actually very challenging for newer people as well. So the Zazen became, at least from what I've heard people saying, intense and deep and very still. So I'll come back to that a little bit, but effort. How many different ways we are told that making an effort is crucial. You must make an effort in your practice. And the Buddha said this many times. Here's just a couple of the quotes. A good student is steadfast, solid in his effort, not shirking his duties with regard to skillful qualities. It's practically Calvinist. It's not shirking his duties. The Buddha also said, ever grows the glory of him who is energetic, mindful, and pure in conduct, discerning and self-controlled, righteous, and heedful. And this word heedful comes up a lot. Heedful, being mindful of, always attending to, always alert to and awake to. So always make an effort is a very frequent teaching in the early canon. If you want to live in such a way, do not waste time. We hear this every time we recite the liturgy many, many times. We're told three things are necessary for enlightenment: great faith, great doubt, and great determination. So work it, work it, work it, right? So what is this make an effort? And that raises the question, for me at least, of what does it mean to waste time? The ego instinctively protects itself all the time. Our little ego secretly knows it's impermanent and fights tooth and nail against that, and is protecting itself from any perceived threat, anything that tells us the self is impermanent, the self tries to avoid. So if we're feeling anxious or slack or lazy, one of our instincts may be to bear down upon that. Oh, to the extent that I feel sort of loose, I must make a bigger effort. I have to try harder. Double down. So you lean in and you're very determined. Have you ever sat next to somebody that was in that state of mind at a retreat? There it is. Tight, right? And upright, but tight. And leaning in. There's a hardness there. It can actually be really aggressive and even violent to the self. Shut up and listen. I'm doing this, making this effort. And it's aggressive to people around you as well, because it pushes in. At the same time, not wasting time, I shouldn't waste time, can be our code for I'm so busy. I need to do this, this, and that. I should be multitasking. I'm too busy. And so Zen becomes just another thing to do. Right effort becomes a duty, a chore, something we have to do, should do. There's a story told about Shunryu Suzuki when Richard Baker was one of his senior students and was kind of high in the leadership and had a lot of responsibilities at City Center. He was often late to Zazen or would miss a period of Zazen. And Suzuki said to him one day, it's okay, Zazen is what we do when we don't have anything better to do. And supposedly after that, he was never late again. He got in there. That is what you do when there's nothing better to do is a better attitude than it's next on my list. I got to do Zazen today. I haven't done my 20 minutes or whatever. It's a chore instead of it's a joy. It's an opportunity. So effort should not be joyless. It shouldn't be pride or shame or fear or guilt or a sense of lack or even desire for enlightenment. These things can get you to the cushion, but they won't keep you there. We stay there and we return because we touch this joyousness. The true self, we're told, is eternal, selfless, joyous, and pure. And Zazen should reflect this bright and upright, but relaxed. And in some way, full of love. There's a generosity in that space, not strained. And here I am saying it should be this and should be that, so don't pay any attention to me. Sometimes it is tight. Sometimes it is hard. Sometimes we have to lean in. Sometimes desire is the only thing that will get us there. But if we stick with it and really settle this upright, joyous, bright, relaxed space can appear. So what does it mean to not make an effort? We talked some over the week about right effort, which implies wrong effort. One of the verses we looked at is refined action, which implies unrefined or unfinished action. Rather than wrong action, I'm interested in not making an effort. What does that look like? There's probably, everybody in this room has something in their mind where they say, I can't do such and such. It may be something big, I can't do mathematics, I can't do calculus. But it might be, I can't go to morning Zazen because it starts too early. It might be, I can't sit for a whole day. It might be, I can't do a retreat. I can't because of these things. We have to look into that can't because it's often code for I won't because it scares me. It's uncomfortable. It's unfamiliar. I don't know how. It's challenging. I don't know what to expect. That was my can't. If you're anxious about practice, anxious about your ability to do it, especially your ability to bring real effort to your practice, you can turn it into, I can't do this. It's okay for those people. It's easier for her because, but not for me. We're full of all these scripts about being good or better or worse people. A lot of them are about being worse than other people. But having a script about being better than another person is just as limiting. Comparing mind can be just so silly. I mean, who cares what another person is doing to find enlightenment? Who cares how they're doing it? Who cares what their path looks like? But we compare ourselves to each other all the time, in a lot of ways. So this retreat was very good for looking at your own comparing mind. The bell rings in the early hours of the retreat, the first evening, the bell rings and we're all sitting, and that bell is not going to ring again for 2 hours. So who's going to be the first one to stand up? Who's going to be the first one to go walk? Is it going to be me? Does that reflect on me? Am I the failure here? I don't know how much that was going through people's minds, but I imagine there was a little bit of it. And eventually someone stood up, and eventually another person stood up, and we learned to do that very quickly. It didn't last. Very quickly, people just rose, walked, changed posture, laid down, went out to the Ngawa as they needed to. And we were each forced to listen to our body and respond to our body and our body's needs and ask the question, is it my mind that needs to move or is it my body that needs to move? And if you need to move your body, can you do that without moving your mind? That was the simple problem of this retreat. We didn't bow to our seats when we left. We didn't bow out of the zendo because you're still doing zazen. So very slowly but quietly, it goes out. It's a matter of becoming comfortable, really comfortable, taking care of yourself and not expecting somebody else to take care of your practice. So this comparing mind, I'm not sure that person's doing what they should be doing. I don't know if I'm doing as much as that person's doing. All these scripts become really vapor. They're pointless when everybody has to take care of themselves. So when in my first years of practice, and I found myself thinking about this week, all those hours, days, weeks I spent waiting for the bell to ring. What happens next? Is there going to be a Taisho? I hope it lasts a long time because I need entertainment. All of that just falls away and you let go completely of waiting for the bell to ring. You let go of what happens next. You really lose track of time. I also did the practice of, I think the precentor has fallen asleep. That was a practice I would do in retreats. Is he really awake? You have to let go of that. So it's letting go of what happens next and just doing this. We did not police attendance. Nobody came looking for people if they weren't in the zendo. We did have staff. I'm very grateful for the staff who did commit to being here at certain times and doing certain things. They had to show up. Everybody else didn't have to show up. They were in charge of themselves. So I think if we are doing this right, people come and go without comment, but also they come and go without notice. I'm not attending to what this other person is doing. I'm doing my practice. And I think we can do that in any structure, in any group, in any meeting. We can bring this mind of, I am taking care of myself, and I am trusting you to take care of yourself, and together we are caring for this. We can bring that into a committee, into a cohort meeting, into a class. And if we find ourselves being slack or lazy, if we find ourselves deceiving ourselves, I've always thought that was so interesting, the way I could lie to myself about lying to myself. I could create a story to convince myself of something as though somehow two people were involved. If you find yourself deceiving yourself about your need, inventing ways to get out of it, you're forced to look more deeply into what is it that needs to move? What is it that wants out of here? What is this that wants a break? And maybe you need a break. So when you take it, there's no guilt, no apology. So in this constant moving toward what was simple, I didn't even really want to do Vespers because it seemed a little fussy. But I'm really glad we did. It was beautiful. It was beautifully sung. It was a wonderful way to end the evening. But I also just could hear the guidance in Vespers about effort. I mean, there's the obvious one about by our own wills and vigilance. That's saying it's your effort that will do this. Your own wills and vigilance will cut your fetters away. But there's all these other subtle clues about effort in there. To do the work within my heart. We're calling to something to help us do the work within my heart. But the work is in here. The line, "Thou art all successful." It's sung out to Kanzeon, but it's our success. Right here, right now, we are all successful. And I love this line, "Let us be engulfed within the mandala." Engulfed. What is the effort of being engulfed? The effort is to let that happen. To relax, to surrender, to quit fighting, to drop the struggle, and be engulfed in the mandala. All these are efforts. So how do you find this balance? How do we find the balance between putting forth an effort which requires us to maybe do things that are a little uncomfortable and taking care of ourselves? The challenge of this retreat is the challenge we all have every day in our lives. We just don't notice that we are actually doing this all the time. Nobody rings a bell at home to tell me to get up. I set the alarm or I don't set the alarm. Nobody's going to come make sure I get to work on time. I'm responsible for that. No one tells me to sit. Nobody tells me to go to the gym. No one points me at the next task that needs to be done or assigns me something. This is just ordinary daily life. We have to look up and see what needs to be done and do it. We already know how to do this. The other thing about right effort is if that's our focus, what is my right effort? The focus is your right effort. It's yourself. And right effort is balance. Right effort is also right for you. I was thinking, how do we exert ourselves without tension? And I thought, well, there is a little tension. There, you couldn't walk without tension. You can't sit up straight without tension. It's like engaging a muscle. It's this kind of natural tension of something functioning. So there is a little work here. But it's the work of being alive. It's the work of being. It's the kind of work that's done by your cells right now as you sit here, by blades of grass growing. It's the tension of life. So I found myself thinking, can I sit like a blade of grass? Just alive? Not trying to be anything but a blade of grass? Ananda was a good teacher this week because she's never trying to be anything but a dog, and she gets up and moves when she feels like moving and takes whatever posture is best. And at one point I was sitting on the Ngawa and she was sitting near me and kind of huffed and got up and walked over to the grass and quietly threw up. And then sighed and curled up and laid down again. And I thought, now that's really good effort. Because there's a little bit of tension there, the tension of life, but meeting it directly, meeting it completely. So it's not this kind of relaxation. It's a bright relaxation. What's next? There is pure physical work, just showing up. Just sitting down, just getting that alarm set, getting out of bed today. It's raining, I know, coming here anyway. That's effort. Just staying awake. And there's a little, but just a little bit of psychic effort. That little bright spot, that little tiny degree forward. But without expectation. Just that much tension. And I don't know, I do not know what makes that effort. I don't know what allows me to do that, helps me to do that. I do know that I can engage my own discipline only when I have a foundation of acceptance, acceptance of myself. You can't discipline the body in a wholesome way if you hate the body. If you don't respect the body, you can't take care of the body. You can't discipline your mind if you are convinced your mind is deformed or broken, or you are somehow inadequate or failing. You accept yourself as you are, you accept the body as it is, and meet it and find out what is right for this body and this self. So right effort is right for you. And only you know what is right for you. Only you know when you're not showing up for it. So we talked, we had verses to read this week. We didn't talk about them until we did Mondo yesterday, but a lot of the verses are about, you got to do this, don't shirk, be heedful. Ugh. And then there's a few others. This is from Bodhidharma's Bloodstream Sermon. A Buddha doesn't observe precepts. A Buddha doesn't do good or evil. A Buddha isn't energetic or lazy. A Buddha is someone who does nothing, someone who can't even focus his mind on a Buddha. A Buddha isn't a Buddha. Don't think about Buddhas. If you don't see what I'm talking about, you'll never know your own mind. A Buddha is an idle person. He doesn't run around after fortune and fame. What good are such things in the end? People who don't see their nature and think reading sutras, invoking Buddhas, studying long and hard, practicing morning and night, never lying down, or acquiring knowledge is the Dharma, blaspheme the Dharma. I love that a Buddha is an idle person. So what is not making an effort in that sense? In Zazen rules, there are lines about non-thinking. Do non-thinking. What is this non-thinking? It is not thinking, and it is not not thinking. It's not a lot of help, is it? I don't know how many of you have listened to those verses and thought, so what is non-thinking? But there's also non-acting, and it is not acting, and it is not not acting. Non-acting is not doing self-directed, ego-directed activity. It's activity that is free of attachment to the outcome. Activity that is just the activity. It's being open to suggestion or direction or other ways to do it, because the self is not involved. The self is in rhythm with conditions. So conditions arise and an action rises in response. In practical terms, it may mean dropping preferences, dropping habits, noticing the way a preference arises and letting it go. Letting go of the need to be in charge or to change things or to do things a certain way. Deeply non-acting is free acting. Acting freely, picking up and putting down freely. Not being driven by karma. but not being deceived by it. So it may mean being borne forward by circumstances. It may mean dancing with the circumstances. It may mean gently turning the circumstances. This is how Dogen responds to Shakyamuni's exhortation about always make an effort. And go figure, nobody chose this for Mondo yesterday. The root of effort is to reflect on just sitting. Shakyamuni Buddha said, "I always make an effort. That is why I have attained unsurpassable, complete, perfect enlightenment." Always make an effort is the entire past, present, and future from head to tail. I always make an effort is I have attained unsurpassable, complete, perfect enlightenment. Therefore, I always make an effort. If not so, how would it always make an effort? If not so, how would it be I have attained? He is saying practice and enlightenment are not differentiated. Always make an effort is I have attained, because it can't be otherwise. Effort makes itself when it rises from this place. Free acting. And lastly, I had this question come up this week about how does the Sangha do this? If what we are doing is focusing on our own effort, what is right for me, self-regulating our practice, finding our own position, literally finding our own posture, how do we do this together? And it rained earlier in the week, and I thought that was really sweet as we slowly walked around the Ngawa under the eaves and the rain came down, and it felt, this is where the Sangha began. It began with individual monks sitting in the forest, and over time they came together in the rainy season. They gathered together to sit together in the monsoons. So it just reminded me of how organically and slowly and naturally we come together to do this. We practice alone together. We are always sitting in silence separately, and there's a way that you can't avoid the fact of your separateness. You are absolutely confined to this separateness in a way. What is in our minds and hearts is our very own. We have unshared needs and pain and private thoughts that are never, never known. But we breathe the same air, literally breathe the same air, breathe each other's breath. And there's no way to avoid that fact, that our lives are interpenetrating. So Sangha treasure also expresses this right effort of I alone. Katagiri, Dainin Katagiri said, "If your effort were not supported by the universe as a whole, you could not make any real effort at all. You are all moving along together. If you believe that everything you need to do can be done just by personal effort, you will eventually fall into desperation because you will find a situation where your effort alone is not enough." And awakening to enlightenment is one of those situations, I think. I must make the effort, but my effort alone is not enough. The weight I want to lift is my life, and it's too heavy to lift alone. I need your help. We lift each other. There's a kind of primary yes in our practice. Sometimes my bow is that yes. Sometimes not, but I can lean into this primary yes of acceptance, open-handedness, willingness, curiosity, and primarily awareness. Awareness is complete acceptance. No flinching, not half turned away, not provisional, not if or when. Acceptance is awareness. And when we can do that, when we can accept completely what's in front of us, that I think is that right effort is attaining unsurpassable enlightenment. And attaining unsurpassable, complete, perfect enlightenment is just make an effort. Questions or comments? If anyone who was at the retreat wants to say anything, that would be nice.
So when you talk about, he went through this thing about what it should look like and then said, don't pay any attention to that. What I was thinking when you were talking about all that was, I've been going through this thing in the prisons and the jails where, you know, I go in, I do Zen practice. We're going to sit for 30 minutes in silence. Well, people really can't do that if they don't have any basis for doing it. This is what I'm beginning to realize. So I've started doing guided meditation, which is not my preference at all. But what I'm finding is that for some people, that's required in order to get them through the door, to get because they're doing that thing about needing to be entertained. And I used to think, well, I'm not going to give them my voice to entertain them with because they need to like find themselves. And so I was being kind of hardcore about it. And I'm beginning to soften with that and trying to figure out what makes the most sense to help people, you know, get through that. So I think that there's a time, we have to recognize that there are developmental stages to our practice, and I think there's a time when that effort needs to be supported in some particular way, and sometimes, like you say, sometimes you do have to be that just really determined, tight, go for it kind of, you know, that kind of effort. But Kyogen talked to me once when I asked him about the effort. He said, well, that's a good question. You're asking the right question. Very helpful. But he did say something about effort and non-effort and finding the balance there. And I think that that changes and shifts over time. And I think that's one of the values of a retreat like this is that we're sort of thrown back on ourselves to figure this out. The people who were participating in the retreat, for the most part, were people who had been practicing for a while and were able to do that. But I think it's not always that easy for someone who's just new to practice.
Right. Yeah. No, we need many gateways. You know, in Rinzai practice, what we do, Shikantaza, is the last koan. It's right. The hardest practice. They begin with koan practice and multiple other ways in, because this is actually, it's quite hard for most of us to figure out. So I think all my years of when will the bell ring and what's the next exciting thing to happen were just my gateways. You know, my secret stash of candy and all those other little ways that I was protecting myself from the true effort. I had to do those things.
Yeah, I tend to think there's nothing wasted. So it can look, you look back on it and you can say, well, that was a waste of time. I don't think there's any, I think we all find our way.
Right.
For many of my early years, I would say my trust in the practice, that is what guided me, and I trusted in my Buddha's nature, and because it did seem to give me the right effort I needed. But at one point, I kept getting these messages, not retreat, not putting in that that effort, and maybe my effort didn't look like what you described, but that's what it was. It was ignoring my body for that mind effort in the Zendo. And finally my body just kept saying no. And I had to find the right effort in actually being able to listen to my body. And that was a very confusing time because I had to find that no moving mind when I had to keep moving and not doing those very still things that were hurting my body. I don't know if I had a point at the end of that, but I guess as a large female, I always felt like I had to conform, I had to be able to do this stuff. Like I had to force my body to do these things. But that still wasn't giving me that connect to my body.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the idea that there's one practice for everybody is just, I mean, that just doesn't make sense. We are very different. There have to be multiple pathways. But we also have to really genuinely ask ourselves, is this what's the right choice for me? I mean, there was a big coward in me that didn't want to confront something that wasn't about my body at all. So I had to find a way for it to work for my body, and it did. But that's not true for everybody, and there's a lot of kinds of practices that I physically could not do. I mean, there's no way I could engage in a lot of traditional monastic practice physically. I couldn't do it. So we just have to be open about not putting conditions on awakening, not putting conditions on enlightenment, and certainly not putting conditions on our own ability to awaken.
That's a, like, putting conditions on, that's what I was doing.
I think if we can engage this awareness and acceptance is attaining unsurpassable enlightenment, true awareness and acceptance is right effort, we can still ask questions about what are the ways I entertain and distract myself in my daily life? What are the ways that I avoid silence or space in my daily life? But what my daily life looks like will not look like yours. And that's okay. I can't see.
How does right effort relate to relationships with the people that come into your space that you might not know very well, and they act in a way and speak in a way as if they want you to give them an answer? And so you leave yourself and you try to forget yourself and you try to listen to what they're asking for and give the right effort, but not overwhelm somebody with a whole lot of rhetoric that might, like you're talking about, the teacher over there said, some people aren't prepared to do lengthy meditations. Some people want answers, and the ego might think, well, I can respond to that with right effort for goodness, you know, as opposed to for procrastinating their question. But how do you know the limitations of your own understanding of what is needed or what you're imposing upon somebody because you've learned something, but it will just not be suitable for that situation? How do you have the discernment to know what is right effort when you're with strangers or not? They're not strangers, they're just people that you don't know very well.
So I don't think that it's It's not exactly effort that you're talking about there, but what we'd call right medicine or skillful means. You know, the effort there is to be clear in yourself, to go clear in yourself, what am I hearing? What does this person need? Not to have a prescribed answer for a particular question. You know, you can be asked the same question by three people and they should get three different answers because you're hearing the question from that person. So it's about giving the right medicine for the right illness, we say. So the effort is to be really present and aware of what's needed, not giving more than or less than what's needed, and not giving a prescription that you think is right. You know, not having a rigid idea of what's appropriate. Like Genko's saying, not going in and saying, this is how we do it, but noticing what is needed. And when I said, sometimes we dance with circumstances. We say the bodhisattva dances with their karma. When you have that attitude, you meet what's in front of you in a very limber way, and it's not what you expected, so you do something else. The dance goes this way. So the effort is that softness to meet clearly. Does that make sense?
It's a very sincere situation, a very honest
approach
to the situation.
It's awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for that talk. I always feel I don't have enough time to digest before I put out a very raw form of a question. And that's why sometimes I listen online on the blog, again, which I recommend highly to hear the talks twice or when I can't be here. But I have two possibly related questions. One is that effort to me seems, my experience is that it's inspired, and it's usually inspired by respect, and it's a little bit outside of myself. So because I respect the teachings or the Buddha's, everything, what we do in learn in Jukai or the Eightfold Path and Four Noble Truths, I feel like my respect creates the effort. And discipline, I'm very envious of people who just have the habit and don't need that other connection, that just can do it, you know? And I don't know how they overlap and what you might say about that. And my other question to you is, as a writer and an author, how you deal with deadlines. When you have a deadline and you don't feel like writing or doing what needs to be done, editing, and yet you need to keep a certain pace to reach a certain deadline, because I have a lot of people around me that live by deadlines, and I know what they go through, and sometimes I do.
I'm not going to engage too much on the second question, because we all have deadlines. Every one of us in this room has deadlines, schedule, things that have to be done by a certain time, and we all have different strategies for working with that. And part of maturity is figuring out what strategy works for you and not making excuses. Trying to remember the first part of the question.
Effort being motivated by respect.
Yeah. So the people that you see, I mean, it works in a lot of ways. You see somebody who has something you want, maybe it's discipline, maybe it's equanimity, and that inspires you. And often we begin by imitating a person who does or seems to have what we want. So that worked for them, so I'm going to try that. It has to become yours. You have to investigate whether it works for you. But it's important to remember they weren't born doing that. You know, maybe the Buddha was. I don't know. But mostly people are not born with tons of discipline and awareness. They developed it too. It's the river just keeps on flowing. We all learn. So at some point it becomes your effort, even though this person you admire does it that way, it turns out through investigation that's not exactly right for you. So what is right for you? And I meant it when I said, I don't know what makes this effort, but I know it's not entirely me. Whether you call it inspiration or respect, there is something in us that knows how, and we have to just let that live.
And discipline, how is it different?
Discipline is just an expression of effort. Your discipline, just like right effort, will not, what's right for you won't be right for me. The right amount of discipline for you will not be the same as for me. I know that there are times when I am being undisciplined. And there are times when discipline just naturally comes forth. So it's only you can answer that question.
Thank you.
Yeah, not much help, I know. Up here?
Very thought-provoking for me. I think it's fair to say from what you, this retreat that you just were involved with, that you described, and other things, that there's a lot of experimentation going on now in the Sangha with the various of the teachers trying different things. That I don't recall it being like that when I first joined, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. I just, there's a lot of experimentation going on, and I think that's quite interesting. And I'm wondering how we, I'm wondering how we have a, how do I put this? Is it possible to somehow be too attached to experimentation instead of doing something more traditional? And I'm not going to say what I prefer. I think there's a space for all this. But I just want to, I want to put that out there. Sitting in that seat, in the presenter seat, every time I'm there, I see people who are new here, and when we start to bow or chant, they're like, it's the deer in the headlights look, and they can't get out of here fast enough. And so how do we accommodate all this? Do we have special sessions for people who don't want to do certain things? Do we talk about it? What do we do? I don't know.
We do have conversations about it, but we are not everything to everybody. It's okay with me if people leave because they don't want to bow. Part of our core practice is bowing. We're not going to give that up. This is the second time we did this retreat in 9 years, so it doesn't feel like a lot of change to me. And rather than experimentation, I would say, you know, the Sangha has changed a lot in the last 3 or 4 years. Our demographics have changed. We've seen a lot of new faces. We're seeing younger faces and a lot of more diversity. And I would say it's more about deeply asking the question of accommodating a diverse Sangha without losing our core practices. Bringing a core practice, it's a form. Our core practice is Zazen and the basic teachings and precept practice, and we can engage that in a lot of ways. So it's a conversation anybody in this room can be part of and should be part of. That's why we've allowed so many cohort groups to develop. and why there are six significant retreats a year, and they're all a little bit different, but they all engage the core practices of sitting and fundamental dharma, and doing it together. That doing it together just looks a little different each time. So I think it's just a little branching of the tree. We also have conservatives and revolutionaries and moderates in the Sangha, and all voices are part of it. I just want to end by saying that Wednesday was the fifth anniversary of Kyogen's death, and he's the one who patiently sat there and let me hide candy and wait for the next bell and get through all those retreats. And that teaching of patience was very important to me. That teaching of allowing people to find their way in their own time, just making it available and letting people find how it works for them, was his gift to me. So I want to be part of offering that gift to others. So.